It just might be time for a mind shift. If you don't know what that means, join me, your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, here on this exclusive patrons-only episode, only available on Patreon.
Hey everyone, welcome to the special patrons-only edition of Mindshift Podcast that's available right here, only on Patreon. We're going to be taking a look in a minute at Project 2025. I thank you once again for all your support. It is greatly appreciated. All right, let's get going and look at this issue. What exactly is Project 2025? If you've never heard of it, that's entirely understandable. Fortunately, however, more and more journalists are starting to reveal not only the agenda of Project 2025, but who exactly is behind it, and moreover, which conservative and Christian right organizations have signed on to partner with it also. For example, I've read articles in Politico, the Bucks County Beacon, Salon, The Guardian, and other major media outlets. Finally, the word is starting to get out there. Now, you can check out the podcast I did with Jenny Cohn, as well, in which we devoted the entire episode to her research and reporting on Project 2025. I've also interviewed Andra Watkins about her too, and both of these women get a mention in this episode. Just as a warning up front, this is going to be another really long episode, but as always, we'll take a deep dive into the whole thing to try and cover all the bases. I want to give you as much information as possible. Now, before we get into the ins and outs of Project 2025, it's worth taking a step back and noting that this time around, at least as far as I can tell, Donald Trump's campaign is markedly different from both his 2016 and 2020 presidential campaigns. What's different is that he's not only freely using authoritarian and fascist rhetoric, he says if he's elected, he's planning on weaponizing the DOJ, the Department of Justice, and the intelligence community against his enemies. He's speaking freely about mass roundups and deportations of illegal immigrants, muzzling and or silencing the free press, and much more. What's also different is that this time around, Trump has a willing cadre of people who are working their damnedest to implement that sort of vision if he should win the presidential election in November. Now, that's just a little bit of foreshadowing, but I'm going to make those points, I think, more clear as this episode continues. Now, that concern aside for the moment, let's start at the beginning to establish some context. Let's try to figure out exactly what Project 2025 is. It's worth mentioning at the outset that they're running with a budget estimated at $22 million. So this is not a small-time operation. But what exactly is it all about? What's their agenda? How do they plan on achieving their goals? Let's look at their own website from project2025.org. It is officially billed as a, quote, presidential transition project. This means, in effect, that whoever becomes the next conservative president, read Republican, aka Donald Trump, then Project 2025 is on hand to guide the new commander-in-chief in terms of policy from literally day one of his taking office. In other words, if, let's just say, for sake of argument, Donald Trump were to win the 2024 election against Joe Biden, then someone from Project 2025 would be readily available. This representative would hand him a playbook that scripts out which actions he should take from his first day in office. Their aim is to guide the new administration in terms of policies for the first 180 days, as well as providing the right kinds of conservative staffers all ready to go to implement their strategy. Their landing page makes the following claim regarding their agenda. Quote, "It is not enough for conservatives to win elections. If we are going to rescue the country from the grip of the radical left, that's capital L left, we need both a governing agenda and the right people in place ready to carry out this agenda on day one of the next conservative administration. This is the goal of the 2025 presidential transition project. The project will build on four pillars that will, collectively, pave the way for an effective conservative administration," end quote. From the outset, therefore, their aims are clear. But what are these four pillars on which they hope to build that will guide the new conservative administration? Here's the four pillars, again, taken right from their site. Pillar number one is a policy agenda. They state that, quote, building on the legacy of mandate for leadership, this comprehensive policy guide for the incoming presidential administration will offer specific proposals for every major issue facing the country, pulling from the expertise of the entire conservative movement, end quote. I'll explain in a minute what the mandate for leadership is. Pillar number two, personnel database. Their goal in terms of personnel is as follows, quote, the most comprehensive policy agenda will have only limited impact without the right people in place to implement it. The project will cast a net across the country to identify conservatives from all walks of life to serve in the next conservative administration, end quote. As we'll see in a bit, they're already working hard to recruit and train up an army of conservative workers who agree ideologically with their agenda. Pillar three is training, and by this they mean, quote, to turn this talent pool into effective conservative administrators, the project will bring together experts who have served in prior administrations and can share their knowledge through workshops, seminars, online videos, and mentorship, end quote. By talent pool, I assume they're referring to the second pillar. By the right people, they mean conservatives from all walks of life who are willing to serve in the next conservative administration. It's worth delving a little bit more into this third pillar at this point before we move on to the fourth and final one. Essentially, what Project 2025 is advocating is that all future government employees wishing to serve in a conservative government should complete a course of training in their so-called Presidential Administrative Academy, or PAA. They explain the purpose behind the PAA as follows, quote, the Presidential Administration Academy is a one-of-a-kind educational and skill-building program designed to prepare and equip future political appointees now to be ready on day one of the next conservative administration. This academy provides aspiring appointees with the insight, background knowledge, and expertise in governance to immediately begin rolling back destructive policy and advancing conservative ideas in the federal government, end quote. Therefore, if you are someone who either worked for the federal government before or are wishing to start a new career in a conservative context, then you should consider completing the online PAA training course now while there's still time. You could have a new career in civil service working for the Trump administration. And finally, let's look at Pillar 4, 180-day playbook. To guide the new administration, the president obviously needs a playbook that he can immediately begin implementing on day one. They describe their playbook as follows, quote, the time is short and conservatives need a plan. The project will create a playbook of actions to be taken in the first 180 days of the new administration to bring quick relief to Americans suffering from the left's devastating policies, end quote. Thus, at the outset, we're starting to get a good idea of what exactly their agenda is and how they plan to go about making it a reality in the next conservative presidential administration. Americans are suffering from the devastating policies of the radical left, they argue, and so urgent changes are needed. And of course, what better person than Trump to help bring it all about? The Heritage Foundation. Now, before we go too far in our critical evaluation of these four pillars and the larger agenda of Project 2025 overall, I think first we have to establish some historical context. It's important at this point that we step back and ask, who exactly is behind Project 2025? Simply put, the project is the brainchild of the Heritage Foundation. On the About Us page on the Project 2025 site, one notices straight away that the Project 2025 team, comprising of three individuals, Paul Danz, Spencer Chrétien, and Troop Hemingway, yes, that's his real name, all have the Heritage Foundation listed underneath their pictures. So who are these three individuals? Beyond their obvious ties to the Heritage Foundation, it's worth noting that all three have connections dating back to the Trump presidential administration. First, Paul Danz served as the former chief of staff of the OPM, that is the Office of Personnel Management, during the Trump presidency. He now serves as the director of the Presidential Transition Project, or Project 2025. In the second Trump connection, Spencer Chrétien also served under Trump as a former special assistant to the president and associate director of presidential personnel. Third, as for Troop Calhoun Hemingway, who looks as if he's about 15 years old, Here we have, perhaps unsurprisingly, yet another former Trump administration veteran. There's not much information about him on the Project 2025 site, but according to an article about him on the Heritage Foundation site, they lay out his resume as follows. Quote, "The Heritage Foundation today announced Troop Hemingway, a former associate director of the Presidential Personnel Office, PPO, under President Donald Trump, has joined the 2025 Presidential Transition Project as a senior advisor and associate director of personnel placement. Hemingway most recently worked as a senior advisor at America First Policies Institute, America First Transition Project. At the Trump White House, he oversaw presidential appointments in the Departments of Defense, Homeland Security, Energy, and the intelligence community," end quote. Although he's quite young, this guy has certainly accomplished a lot. He also worked on the Trump 2016 campaign, as well as on Trump's 2016 transition team. Note that in the cases of all three individuals, the key word is that they've all worked in personnel, and that was in some capacity during the Trump administration. We'll also see later that a few other key individuals promoting the project also served Trump in various capacities during his presidency. And speaking of Trump, here's a statement from the Project 2025 website that should scare you to death. It states, quote, "The 2025 Presidential Transition Project is being organized by the Heritage Foundation and builds off Heritage's longstanding mandate for leadership, which has been highly influential for presidential administrations since the Reagan era. Most recently, the Trump administration relied heavily on Heritage's mandate for policy guidance, embracing nearly two-thirds of Heritage's proposals within just 1 year in office," end quote. I think that the two most chilling takeaways from that paragraph are as follows. First, the Heritage Foundation's mandate for leadership has guided conservative presidential policies since the Reagan era. That means not only Reagan, but also George H.W. Bush and his son, George W. Bush, were guided in their policies by the Heritage Foundation's mandate. And it's not all about guiding conservative presidents. When there's a Democratic president, if he won't accept their policy recommendations, they'll fight against his agenda as an opposition party. During the Clinton administration, for example, of course, although he was a Democrat, Heritage nonetheless played a major role with the GOP's Contract with America and the Republican takeover of Congress in 1994. And somewhat surprisingly, even Clinton himself aligned a few of his welfare reform policies with the Heritage Foundation's recommendations. And later, during the Obama presidency, the Heritage Foundation opposed his ACA, the Affordable Care Act, otherwise, of course, known as Obamacare. The second chilling aspect, I think, about the statement is this. During the Trump presidency, if you caught this, not only did he rely heavily on the mandate, he embraced nearly two-thirds of their proposals within his first year of office. So who's the true power behind the throne when it comes to guiding and leading Republican presidents dating back as far as Ronald Reagan? It appears that the Heritage Foundation has incredible power and influence. In fact, they are routinely noted as one of the most influential public policy think tanks in America. The Heritage Foundation has also been a major player when it comes to stocking the courts, including the Supreme Court, with hand-picked judges. For example, according to a 2018 New York Times article by journalist Jonathan Mailer entitled "How One Conservative Think Tank is Stocking Trump's Government," he revealed some shocking news. John Malcolm, the head of Heritage's Center for Legal and Judicial Studies, had prepared a list of 8 potential Supreme Court nominees in 2016. Later, at a press conference in 2018, Trump admitted that he had been working with the Heritage Foundation regarding potential Supreme Court nominees. Brett Kavanaugh's name was on the list that Malcolm had compiled 2 years earlier, and obviously he survived his bruising, not to mention highly controversial, confirmation hearing to land an appointment to the Supreme Court. Therefore, the Heritage Foundation's hand-picking of judges on multiple court levels obviously paid off during the Trump era. That the Supreme Court later overturned Roe v. Wade is but a testament to how long organizations such as the Heritage Foundation have been playing this game. If you haven't figured it out by now, these people are extremely serious about what they're doing, and they've been working very hard for a long time to advance their conservative agenda with quite a bit of success. Let's look at the history of the Heritage Foundation for a minute. sometimes referred to simply as Heritage, this conservative think tank was founded in 1973 during the Nixon administration. The three founders were first Paul Weyrich, second Edwin Fulner, and third Joseph Coors. Yes, the same Coors who was the president of the massive Colorado-based beer company. Coors, incidentally, was involved more in terms of funding as opposed to policies, although he was noted as a right-wing conservative who supported both Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan. Those familiar with the rise of the Christian right in the late 1970s will immediately recognize the name Paul Weyrich because he was the key player who convinced Jerry Falwell Sr. to form the Moral Majority in 1979. I think that Weyrich was one of the most influential figures in the formation of the nascent Christian right as well as the conservative right. In addition to helping kickstart the Moral Majority, Weyrich also helped to found the Free Congress Foundation as well as the American Legal Education Council, or ALEC. For his part, Edward Fulner not only helped form Heritage along with Weyrich and Coors, he served as its president from 1977 to 2013, and then again from 2017 to 2018. Prior to helping start up Heritage, he had been a congressional aide and foreign consultant. Under his leadership, in terms of marketing strategy, Heritage went from a relatively small organization to a massive think tank for conservative ideals. Let's look at the mandate for leadership. I mentioned a bit ago that Heritage has this so-called mandate for leadership, but what actually is it? The mandate is a series of books that Heritage publishes that offer up guidance and make recommendations concerning policies that they hope the federal government will implement. Within the mandate, conservative experts write individual chapters, so they're a collaborative effort rather than the work of one person. The authors who write each individual chapter are considered to be experts in that field, be it the economy, the military, immigration, foreign policy, or whatever other fields of government they talk about or write about. Typically, the mandate for leadership is released to coincide with the beginning of a new presidential administration. This is done in the hopes that the new president will implement some, or better yet, all, from their point of view at least, their policy recommendations. Since the Reagan era, 10 versions of the Mandate for Leadership have been published by Heritage. Heritage's policy priorities. One last thing about Heritage before we get back to Project 2025. What are their major drivers in terms of policy recommendations? Although I don't want to take the time to unpack each of these in depth, the following list of 7 policy priorities reveals much, I think, about Heritage's agenda as they, quote, fight for America's future, their words. We already heard how they feel about the so-called radical left and its terrible policies that are clearly destroying America, which, of course, they believe they are fighting to preserve. And keep in mind, this is the organization behind Project 2025. So in terms of ideology and worldview, we need to gain an understanding of where they're coming from. Let's take a look at these 7 policy priorities. They are as follows, as described on their own website. Number 1. Empower parents to make educational choices. Here, Heritage is combating such terrible teachings in public schools as critical race theory and gender equality. Parents, they argue, should have the right to choose in terms of their children's education. This opens the door, in my opinion, for parents to pull their kids out of public schools and enroll them in either private schools or homeschool them. It also speaks to the issue of state funding for private or charter schools, as well as the right strive to take over public school boards and administrations. Number 2, secure America's borders and reduce crime. Straight out of Trump's talking point, build that wall. Immigration, especially at the U.S.-Mexico border, is a huge talking point for Trump and his hordes of blindly devoted cult MAGA worshippers. Somehow they bought the lie that it's an open border, whereby illegal immigrants are simply streaming across daily, completely unopposed, in their tens of thousands. These caravans of immigrants include, of course, terrorists who are freely mixed in with these animals and vermin, as Trump now refers to them. Number 3, ensure free and fair elections. Now, to me, this is a clear example of loaded insider jargon that supports Trump's big lie. Another buzzword they're fond of using is election integrity. But the truth is, American elections are, in fact, both free and fair. The entire argument about the need for free and fair elections is what Trump and those on the right have been bleeding about for a while, certainly since the 2020 election and perhaps before. I think it just sounds better to phrase it that way instead of saying American elections are rigged and stolen. Of course, Trump often says that. However, it's been proven time and time again that the 2020 election, for example, was one of the least corruption-free elections in U.S. history. Ironically, the only people who were convicted of election fraud were Republicans, not Democrats. Number four, reverse the growth of regulations, spending, and inflation. Trump was infamous during his presidency for loosening or removing entirely such pesky regulations on corporations like, you know, where they could drill for oil or engage in fracking. National parks, anyone? In fact, using executive orders, Trump was incredibly aggressive in terms of deregulation during his presidency. Some of his efforts were nakedly obvious in that they enriched him personally or were simply a way for him to repay campaign funding. This, of course, was paid for by corporate lobbyists hostile to regulations for their particular industries or their corporations. The truth is, America needs regulations, particularly when it comes to destroying and protecting natural resources and protecting the health, safety, and well-being of workers. Number five, counter the threat of communist China. Now, in principle, I might actually agree with them on this one, or at least aspects of their agenda. China, I think, is a major threat, politically, economically, militarily. Plus, I hate how China has become Big Brother. It's one of the most highly surveilled societies in the world. China uses new technology to spy on and crack down on its people. They even use AI facial recognition software, for example, to root out jaywalkers, and then publicly exposes them on Chinese social media in an effort to control its populace. But what exactly is the threat, and how does Heritage plan to counter it? That much isn't entirely clear. Number six, hold big tech accountable. Again, I might be in agreement with some aspects of this one too. I mean, how do we regulate mega corporations like Facebook, X, or other giant social media platforms? There have been documented cases of, for example, Facebook selling its users' data. However, they will have a problem. Heritage wants to ban TikTok because, they argue, of course, it's a giant Chinese data-collecting app designed to prey on Americans. But, of course, one major problem here, Trump was, until recently, all for banning TikTok. But, of course, once he met up with billionaire and major TikTok investor Jeff Yass at Mar-a-Lago recently, he did a complete 180. Now he loves the platform and wants to keep it. And finally, number seven, protect unborn life and family formation. There we are. You knew we couldn't get away from the topics of abortion and family. Of course, Heritage is anti-abortion, and the fear is that despite successfully overturning Roe v. Wade, they want to pass laws to make abortion laws even more draconian and restrictive, and the practice itself illegal. And when they say, quote, family formation, what they mean is heterosexual, married, monogamous couples. So same-sex marriages, drag queens, pornography, abortions, and so on, they argue, have clearly destroyed America. It's all a question of how they define the family and what doesn't constitute a legitimate family in their view. Anyway, when taken together, I think it's clear that these seven agenda items reveal a lot about where Heritage is coming from ideologically. A lot of Trump's talking points, both during his presidency and again on the campaign trail, now tend to echo these seven conservative priorities. Let's look at Project 2025. Now, returning to Project 2025, we're now starting to have a good idea of the agenda of the organization behind it, the Heritage Foundation. Not only do we now know its history, we are also forming a clearer picture of its agenda, as well as their outsized influence on American policies and presidents, particularly Republicans. And just because there might be a Democrat in office, that doesn't mean they'll quietly go away until the next GOP president sits in the Oval Office. Forming an opposition party aligned with Republicans, they have played a huge role in fighting against what they view as the liberal and destructive agenda of the so-called radical left. What's the basic agenda of Project 2025? Again, drawing from the About page on their own website, they declare that this ideology is what is driving them forward. They say, quote, "The actions of liberal politicians in Washington have created a desperate need and unique opportunity for conservatives to start undoing the damage the left has wrought and build a better country for all Americans in 2025," end quote. In other words, for Project 2025, it's not enough to try and influence a conservative president in terms of policy alone. This time around, they're attempting to stack the deck by having an army of dedicated people in place to help him carry out their agenda from day one. This might explain, I think, why all three leaders of Project 2025 all have that keyword personnel somewhere in their resumes. The site goes on to state that, quote,
The project is the effort of a broad coalition of conservative organizations that have come together to ensure a successful administration begins in January 2025. With the right conservative policy recommendations and properly vetted and trained personnel to implement them, we will take back our government, end quote. I'll come back to this later, but it's worth noting that when they state the Project 2025 is the effort of a, quote, broad coalition of conservative organizations, they ain't kidding. Over 100 conservative organizations have signed on to Project 2025, and that list includes some very serious and influential Christian right players indeed. Later on, I'm going to take a quick look at just a few of the more notable organizations that have partnered with Project 2025. Let's have a look at the Project 2025 playbook. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that everything goes the way that Project 2025 people hope it does come November. Trump wins a presidential election, and by January 2025, all the key players are in place, an army of well-trained, ideologically agreeable civil servants. In addition, there's been a purge of all those advisors and government workers who are deemed inappropriate in terms of their politics and worldviews. Someone from Project 2025 hands Trump the Mandate for Leadership playbook on day one after his inauguration, and he starts immediately to implement all the recommended policy changes as they lay them out. So what happens next? Here's a rundown of all the items taken from their manifesto. Basically, all the policy changes they'd love to see put in place on the first day of Trump's presidency. We've already noted that they build on four pillars, but when we delve deeper into their playbook, here are some of the policy categories that should make you more than concerned to list a few. And keep in mind, there are a lot more than I have time to get into here. The following list includes just some of the more disturbing ones. Number one, family and abortion. It's telling how they define what a family should look like. Roger Severino, Vice President of Heritage's Domestic Policy, writes in the manifesto on the subject of families that, quote, families comprised of a married mother, father, and their children are the foundation of a well-ordered nation and healthy society, end quote. In other words, no LGBTQ plus rights, no same-sex marriages allowed. On the subject of abortion, Severino argues that the FDA should review and then withdraw its approval of abortion pills such as mifepristone and misoprostol. These are, he maintains, the, quote, greatest threat to life in a post-Roe world. And so he wants to shut down that avenue of getting what he terms a, quote, mail order abortion, now that it's officially against the law. Moreover, Severino desires the government to make it illegal for drug companies to ship these abortion pills through the mail to what he calls pro-life states. So in other words, if you're a pregnant woman in a state where abortion is illegal, Severino wants to shut down the possibility that you could obtain an abortion pill through the mail. That, and the person or business mailing them, should also be jailed. Number two, Christian nationalism. In a Politico article by journalist Heidi Przybyla, she connected the Center for Renewing America, the CFRA, to Project 2025 via an internal memo. The CFRA is just one of their official partners. In the memo, CFRA President Russell Vought, Trump's former budget director, listed Christian nationalism as a major priority for a second Trump administration. In an article in the Bucks County Beacon, journalist Jenny Cohn notes that, quote, Przybyla further reported that CFRA founder Russ Vought, a Project 2025 co-author, had stated last year on X, formerly Twitter, that he's proud to work with William Wolf, a former Trump official and visiting fellow with CFRA, now quoting Vought, on scoping out a sound Christian nationalism. In a social media post, Wolf had called for an end to no-fault divorce and abortion and for reduced access to contraception. Wolf, who has attended Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, has also called himself a Christian nationalist. Soon after Politico's report, Wolf changed his social media profile to remove the reference to his work with CFRA, thus burying his connection to Project 2025 leader Russ Vought. Wolf is also an alumnus of Heritage, the lead organizer of Project 2025, end quote. Wolf also served as the editor of a document uncovered by The Beacon entitled The Statement on Christian Nationalism and the Gospel. One of his authors is Oklahoma State Senator Dusty Devers, who, among other things, not only wants to make pornography illegal, he would also like to pass laws charging women who have had an abortion with murder. According to Cohn, the statement on Christian nationalism, quote, strives to implement a scripture-based system of government whereby Christ-ordained civil magistrates exercise authority over the American public. Specifically, it states that, now quoting the manifesto, Christian nationalism is a set of governing principles rooted in Scripture's teaching that Christ rules as supreme Lord and King of all creation, who has ordained civil magistrates with delegated authority to be under him, over the people, to order their ordained jurisdiction by punishing evil and promoting good for his own glory and the common good of the nation, end quote. Wow, talk about establishing a theocracy and dominion theology writ large. I'll come back to this issue of just how much of Project 2025 has links to extremist Christian nationalism. Number three is the expansion of presidential powers. Project 2025's manifesto would like to place the entire executive branch of the U.S. government under direct presidential control. According to this view, the independence of such organizations as the Department of Justice, DOJ, the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, the Federal Trade Committee, as well as a number of other departments, would no longer operate independently. This is based on what's called the unitary executive theory that vests all authority in the office of the presidency. This has long been a dream of Trump. If you recall, he stated in 2019 that Article 2 of the Constitution gave him, quote, the right to do whatever I want as president. This would potentially include the president deploying the military to put down protests, as Jeffrey Clark proposed in the days after the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Quote, that's why there's an insurrection act, Clark dismissively stated when colleagues warned him there might be riots if Trump attempted to stay in office after losing the election. Within this category, although I've mentioned it already, we can include this issue of installing the correct types of individuals in government jobs and purging those who don't agree with Trump's policies or expansion of power. When he was president, Trump fired a lot of advisors who disagreed with him or attempted to push back in any way. This time around, though, we're told he'll stock governmental offices with loyalists so he won't have the same problem again. According to a 2023 Axios article by journalists Jim Vandehay and Mike Allen, this is how the process will work going forward. They point out that how it all works, and keep in mind that Heritage's personnel database already contains over 4,000 entries of people who want to work in a Trump government, and this is growing daily. They state, quote, the most elaborate part of the pre-transition machine is a resume collection project that drills down more on political philosophy than on experience, education, or other credentials. Applicants are asked to name one person, past or present, who has most influenced the development of your political philosophy, and to do the same with a book. Another query, name one living public policy figure whom you greatly admire and why. They say that we're told immense, intense attention will be given to the social media histories of anyone being considered for top jobs. Those queasy about testing the limits of Trump's power will get flagged and rejected. And they conclude to say, the massive headhunting quest aims to recruit 20,000 people to serve in the next administration as a down payment on 4,000 presidential appointments, plus potential replacements for as many as 50,000 federal workers who are policy adjacent, as Trumpers put it, end quote. Finally, according to an AP News article, CFRA President Russell Vought stated that the project's goal of removing federal workers would look like this. What Vought said was, quote, the president's day one will be a wrecking ball for the administrative state, end quote. Project 2025 director Paul Dan stated that, quote, we need to flood the zone with conservatives in their effort to take back the government of the United States, end quote. Essentially, therefore, if elected, Trump would seek to dismantle the current federal government and instead recreate it with a vision of his own making, all staffed by an army of conservative Trump loyalists. These would all have been vetted and trained by Project 2025 well in advance. This is what makes the possibility, I think, of a second Trump presidency far more frightening than his first shambolic tenure in office. By reinstating something called Schedule F, which the Biden administration has repealed, incidentally, Trump could far more easily fire tens of thousands of federal workers by reclassifying them as at-will employees. In addition, Trump would avoid the mistakes of his first presidency by stocking his cabinet with loyalists from day one, so there won't be anybody in place who can push back or trying to thwart his agenda this time around. Instead, he'll be surrounded by yes men and women who are more than willing to help him carry out his agenda. Number 4, mass deportation of immigrants. The creepy as hell Stephen Miller, one of Trump's former lackeys and major architect of his immigration policies, perhaps unsurprisingly, is also a major player in Project 2025. Back in November 2023, Miller informed Project 2025 partner and megastar Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA that his immigration operation would rival the scale and complexity of, quote, building the Panama Canal. So what exactly does Miller's plan involve? To enact his immigration policies, Miller would seek to deputize National Guard troops in red states and then send them into blue states as immigration enforcement officers. In addition to the military, Miller also considers deputizing local sheriffs and law enforcement, as well as ATF and DEA agents, to help round up illegal immigrants as well. And what would these law enforcement agents do once deputized? According to Miller, they would, quote, go around the country arresting illegal immigrants in large-scale raids, end quote, who would then be taken to, quote, large-scale staging ground near the border, most likely in Texas, end quote. We know that Trump has long had issues with immigrants as far back as his 2016 campaign. According to him, of course, a great number of Mexican immigrants were rapists. Has he softened on that position at all? Of course not. Should he be elected a second time? For example, Trump stated at a rally in 2024 that he would enact, quote, the largest domestic deportation operation in history, end quote. According to the Axios article I just cited from a minute ago, following the weaponization of the DOJ, the FBI, and the intelligence community to go after his political enemies, Trump's second major policy change will be in the area of immigration. The authors point out that following the weaponization of these organizations, Trump's, quote, next priority will be the Department of Homeland Security and the border, with plans to erect sprawling detention camps and scour the country for unauthorized immigrants and deport people by the millions per year, the New York Times reports. We're told that Trump's top criterion for immigration officials will be whoever promises to be most aggressive. Trump has told allies he's confident the Supreme Court will back his most draconian moves, end quote. This is, of course, thanks to his stacking the deck with the appointment of the last 3 Supreme Court justices. Number 5, outlawing pornography. Under the rubric of the family, in the introduction to The Mandate for Leadership, author Kevin H. Roberts makes the following statement, quote, pornography, manifested today in the omnipresent propagation of transgender ideology and sexualization of children, for instance, is not a political Gordian knot inextricably binding up disparate claims about free speech, property rights, sexual liberation, and child welfare. He goes on to say, it has no claim to First Amendment protection. Its purveyors are child predators and misogynistic exploiters of women. Their product is as addictive as any illicit drug and as psychologically destructive as any crime. Pornography should be outlawed. The people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned. Educators and public librarians who purvey it should be classed as registered sex offenders. And telecommunications and technology firms that facilitate its spread should be shuttered, end quote. I've already mentioned we're already seeing legislators like Oklahoma State Senator Dusty Devers, who, of course, is also a pastor of a Baptist church, along with bills that would ban abortions and introduce no-fault divorces, Devers also wants to criminalize pornography. In an article in 2024 in Rolling Stone, journalist Tim Dickinson notes that although Devers had only been on the job a few weeks, his, quote, anti-smut bill would subject porn creators and even viewers to felony prison sentences of up to 20 years. The bill would create a bounty system similar to what Texas instituted in its infamous abortion pill that would allow those who rat out their horny neighbors to collect civil penalties of up to $10,000, end quote. In other words, this is the direction this whole thing's already headed. The threat of extremist Christian nationalists like Devers in public offices is happening right now. Now, there's a lot more to the mandate for leadership, but I don't have time to go into all of them. There's just too much, but those are the things that really jumped out at me. Let's have a look now at these organizations that have signed on. I mentioned earlier that over 100 Christian right and conservative organizations have signed on to Heritage's Project 2025 as partners. Again, I'm not going to be able to go into all 100 of them, but here's just a few that really stuck out to me, and I think they're hugely problematic in their own right. I'm just going to point out a few that I think you should be concerned about. Number one, the Alliance Defending Freedom. If you know anything about the ADF, they are the largest Christian legal defense organization. They were the ones behind the legislation that successfully overturned Roe versus Wade, among other things. They're also one of the most powerful opponents of LGBTQ plus rights. Number two, the ACLJ, the American Center for Law and Justice, of course, J Seculo. This is another major Christian legal defense organization fighting for so-called religious freedom, you know, for all those poor persecuted Christians. Number three, American Family Association. This is a Christian fundamentalist group, again, opposing LGBTQ rights, abortion, and pornography. Number four, the Center for Renewing America. I mentioned them already. This was, of course, founded by former Trump official and Christian nationalist Russell Vought. According to their own agenda, quoting from their site, they say, quote, "Our mission is to renew a consensus of America as a nation under God." So they're Christian nationalists. They also oppose critical race theory. They also want stricter security around U.S. elections. And of course, Vought, as noted, is a major proponent of 2025, in addition to being a Christian nationalist. Number five, the Concerned Women for America. This, of course, was founded by Beverly LaHaye, the wife of Tim LaHaye, back in 1978. This is an evangelical Christian legislative action committee. They are anti-feminist. They seek to incorporate Christian ideology into both social and political movements. Number six, the Discovery Institute. This is a politically conservative think tank located in my hometown of Seattle. They are advocating the pseudoscientific theory of intelligent design, which I think is a more scientific sounding way of saying creation science. Number seven, the Family Research Council, headed, of course, by Tony Perkins and retired General Jerry Boykin. This is a Christian right organization that's essentially the political arm of Dr. James Dobson's Focus on the Family. Of course, they are staunchly anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ+, quote, pro-family legislation, which, of course, you can read as saying heterosexual married couples. It's interesting. Boykin, by the way, once stated that when Jesus returns, he'll be carrying an assault rifle. Number eight, Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. This is a pro-family radio show that was founded by Dobson after he retired from Focus on the Family. Of course, it's profoundly anti-LGBTQ+, and again, pro-family, which we know means only heterosexual married couples. Number nine is the Eagle Forum. This was, of course, founded by Phyllis Schlafly back in 1972. This is another, quote, pro-family. It's an anti-feminist organization. It started out mainly to oppose the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. In fact, its original name was Stop ERA, and it was only later changed in 1975 to Eagle Forum. Of course, they oppose same-sex marriage, they oppose abortion, and they define a family as consisting of a father, a mother, and children. Number 10 is Hillsdale College. This is a Christian liberal arts college in Michigan. They are known for producing smart young conservatives. Now, since 2010, though, it's expanded its influence into the Republican Party. It's interesting that Hillsdale opened a second campus in 2010 in Washington, D.C. It's mainly for graduate students, and it's located directly across the street from the Heritage Foundation's headquarters. Two current faculty members served during the Trump administration, and also Hillsdale has hosted a number of conservative speakers at conferences. Hillsdale alumni have gone on to serve in major government powerful roles. Number 11 is Liberty University, founded, of course, by Jerry Falwell Sr. This is a fundamentalist Christian school located in Lynchburg, Virginia. And we know, of course, Jerry Falwell Jr., of course, was one of the first evangelical leaders to support Trump back in 2016. Number 12 is Moms for Liberty, a conservative political group that advocates against school curriculum that speaks of LGBTQ plus rights, critical race theory, race and ethnicity, and discrimination. Moms for Liberty have also led the fight to ban books from public school libraries that address things like gender and sexuality issues. And during the COVID pandemic, they also campaigned against COVID-19 responses in public schools, such as mandatory vaccination and mask mandates. Number 13 is Patrick Henry College.
Founded in 2004 by Michael Ferris, he was, of course, the co-founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. This conservative Christian school serves as a pipeline for homeschool graduates to enter the legal and political field. There were a lot of Patrick Henry students, for example, who served as interns to the Trump administration or other Republican politicians or conservative judges during his presidency. And last but not least, at number 14, Turning Point USA, or TPUSA, founded by Charlie Kirk and Bill Montgomery, this so-called youth organization advocates for conservative political policies on high school, college, and university campuses. Closely tied to Donald Trump and his son Donald Trump Jr., this right-wing organization has also pushed disinformation about Biden's win in 2020, as well as COVID-19 conspiracy theories and other far-right talking points. Now, these are just 14 of the 100 organizations that have signed on to support Project 2025. Reading through the entire list, essentially, I think it's a rogues gallery of far-right, conservative, and Christian right organizations, all of whom are on board to support the agenda of Heritage and Project 2025. At the very least, simply given the names and short backgrounds of these 14 that I pulled out, knowing that they're backing this agenda, that alone should make you more than concerned. All right, let's wrap this thing up. What conclusions can we draw from this overview? Now, believe it or not, there's a lot more controversial stuff in the Project 2025 manifesto than I've got time to delve into. Now, if we went into exhaustive detail, it would take hours more to unpack. But the few points I've examined in this episode really stuck out to me, and it made me consider what a threat it would be indeed if Trump does, in fact, get elected this year. What's the difference between now and the last time? I've kind of talked about this a little bit, but as I understand the situation, it won't be like his previous shambolic presidency. This time, with the help of Heritage and all those other partner organizations, he'll have the deck stacked in his favor. He'll have an army of conservative loyalists already in place, already trained up and indoctrinated ahead of time. As he works the campaign trail now, he's saying the quiet parts out loud. If you listen to his speeches, he's not even bothering to hide his authoritarian fascist tendencies. Making matters worse, Heritage is already on board, training up an army of willing conservatives who are more than ready to make this all happen should he win. Moreover, they already have a playbook ready to hand him so he can immediately start implementing these policies on his first official day in office. You think I'm kidding? In an April 2024 Vanity Fair piece, journalist Gabriel Sherman noted that Trump has long made a career out of monetizing chaos and conflict. But, he writes, quote, Trump's 2024 presidential campaign represents a sinister evolution of his brand. He is running as a would-be dictator out for revenge. I am your retribution, he told supporters at the Conservative Political Action Committee in March 2023, end quote. Sherman goes on to note that, quote, at rallies, Trump even invoked the dehumanizing language of Nazis. Now, quoting Trump, he said, we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country, Trump told supporters in New Hampshire last November. If Trump wins back the White House, his increasingly extreme and violent rhetoric is poised to become policy. The New York Times reported that Trump plans to order mass roundups of undocumented immigrants and detain them in deportation camps. Trump has promised to direct the Justice Department to prosecute Joe Biden. At a rally in February, Trump said he would encourage Russia to do, now quoting Trump, whatever the hell they want to any NATO country that doesn't increase military spending, end quote. According to author Andra Watkins in a March 2024 Salon article, she points out that fortunately some of the media are starting to uncover the aim of Project 2025, which includes among the following. She says, quote, a gutted federal government, immigrants rounded up to work in work camps and deported, a military response to peaceful demonstrations, oppression of women, minorities, the poor, and the disadvantaged, end quote. However, perhaps the most disturbing aspect of all is the Christian nationalist sentiment underlying the whole project. Immediately upon reading the more than 1,000-page manifesto, Watkins recognized it by its language for what it was, a Christo-fascist screed. It gives the game away, she argues, by constantly making use of Christo-fascist language while not overtly citing biblical verses. Rather, throughout its pages, the authors channel biblical concepts
and constantly allude to biblical verses. In other words, this is an example, I think, of insider language or loaded language that those in the know will immediately grasp and understand its true meaning. Watkins points out that, quote, Christian nationalists do not write or speak without referencing the Bible. It is a language American voters would do well to understand before November, or it will be the language of our government, end quote. I mentioned earlier the manifesto entitled The Statement on Christian Nationalism and the Gospel, with Christian nationalist William Wolfe serving as one of its editors. Wolfe, by the way, I think I mentioned this before, he was a mid-level official at the Pentagon and State Department during the Trump era. Now, what's their aim for the American government if Trump wins? Now, I think this is something straight out of R.J. Rushdoony's vision of Christian Reconstructionism. Now, I've already read this once before, but it's worth repeating again. Their definition of Christian nationalism, as Jenny Cohn lays out in her Bucks County Beacon article, and this again is quoting right from the manifesto, it says that Christian nationalism, quote, strives to implement a scripture-based system of government whereby Christ-ordained civil magistrates exercise authority over the American public. Specifically, it states that, now reading from the manifesto again, Christian nationalism is a set of governing principles rooted in Scripture's teaching that Christ rules as supreme Lord and King of all creation, who has ordained civil magistrates with delegated authority to be under him over the people to order their ordained jurisdiction by punishing evil and promoting good for his own glory and the common good of the nation, end quote. Definitely worth hearing that again. As if that weren't extreme enough, the manifesto actually goes further. Now, it includes a statement that I think surely would make R.J. Rushdoony proud. Cohn goes on to note that, quote, William Wolfe's manifesto purports to, now quoting from the manifesto, affirm that the church is to instruct civil authorities regarding their identity and duties as servants before the throne of Christ. We affirm that this duty is a Great Commission issue. And it goes on to say, under the heading Big Picture, the manifesto claims to, now quoting from the manifesto again, affirm that this Christian nationalist project entails national recognition of essential Christian orthodoxy, Article 2, as a Christian consensus under Jesus Christ, the supreme Lord and King of all creation, and the establishment of the general equity of the Ten Commandments as the foundational law of the nation, end quote. And what strikes me about that statement, beyond the notion of using the Ten Commandments as the law of the nation, is this issue of so-called general equity theonomy. If you remember, it's something I discussed in my episode exploring Doug Wilson's theology. I was trying to ascertain whether or not he was in fact a Christian Reconstructionist. While he doesn't overtly claim that title, I think a lot of his talking points and ideas and ideologies seem to mirror a great many Reconstructionist ones. Wilson does claim, though, to hold to the general equity theonomist position, which in a nutshell, it's about seeking to apply the principles that lie behind Old Testament laws for all citizens today. It's a slightly softer stance than that of Rushdoony's, who argue that modern Americans should be governed by a more literal reading of Old Testament laws, specifically the Ten Commandments, as well as their application. He argued, for example, for the stoning of gays, incorrigible teens, or women who were proven not to be virgins on their wedding night. He also defended a biblical notion of slavery too. But that's what the biblical law prescribes, so Rushdoony promoted those positions. But it's worth noting that the Christian Nationalist Manifesto ain't all that far removed from what Rushdoony himself espoused. And these people are some of the major players on the Christian right pushing Project 2025. Speaking of Doug Wilson, it's also worthwhile to point out that he's helped push elements of this agenda too, since his Canon Press published the book The Case for Christian Nationalism by author Stephen Wolfe, who's no relation to William Wolfe, although William Wolfe has enthusiastically promoted Stephen Wolfe's book. And just look at these undeniable connections. Tony Perkins of the FRC, the Family Research Council, as we've already noted, they're a major Project 2025 partner. He interviewed and thereby platformed Doug Wilson in 2020. Moreover, Wilson recently spoke at a conference hosted by far-right pastor Joel Webbin, who was also one of the editors, alongside William Wolfe, of the Manifesto on Christian Nationalism and the Gospel. Let's take a minute to look at Webbin. He hosts the Right Response Ministries, that's a YouTube channel. He's also the pastor of Covenant Bible Church. Recently, he's become infamous for his misogynistic views on women. He just got in trouble the other day, for example, for talking about how he banned his wife from reading a particular book because he hadn't had a chance to read it first. And his clip has gone viral on TikTok. It features Webben saying the following to his wife. He stated, quote, "There are certain books that I've just had to say, hey, I don't know if this is a bad book, but I don't have time to read it, and so you're not going to read it either. We'll read it together," end quote. Webben, of course, advocates the same type of patriarchal controlling behavior for women long promoted by Doug Wilson. Speaking of Wilson, he was also a featured speaker at another conference in September of 2023, hosted by American Moment, which is yet another of Project 2025's supporters. As Jenny Cohn notes, all these Christian right conservative organizations and influencers all tend to run in the same circles. In her article, she points out that, quote, "The event also included Project 2025 co-author Russ Vaught, the former Trump official and founder of the Center for Renewing America, who tweeted out that he was proud to work with William Wolf in scoping out a sound Christian nationalism." We already heard that before. But she goes on to say, "American Moment has separately interviewed both William Wolf and Stephen Wolf and co-hosted an event in January 2022 where participants enjoyed plotting the Protestant regime, according to a tweet by American Reformer author Timon Klein, who attended the gathering. William Wolf and Joshua Abitoy, executive director of American Reformer and a fellow at the Claremont Institute, another Project 2025 partner, also attended, according to Klein's tweet," end quote. These then are just some of the major players and influencers on the Christian right who are not only helping to promote Project 2025, they're partnering with it to help bring about its extreme agenda. That they're not even bothering to hide their clear Christian nationalism and anti-democratic leanings is not just a small problem to be overlooked. They're working overtime to help install a fascist, authoritarian president who would love nothing more than to become a dictator for life. We ignore Trump, as well as the zealots behind Project 2025, to our peril. I'm going to let David Korn have the last word. In a March 2024 article in Mother Jones, journalist Korn comments on the aims of Project 2025, which he explains is, quote, "The enterprise established by the Heritage Foundation and other right-wing outfits to both set a radical right agenda for a possible second Trump term and recruit dear leader loyalists for government posts in that administration. As I've noted, this venture has cooked up plans and measures with an authoritarian bent. It has also been preparing to inject Christian nationalist ideas into a Trump 2.0 presidency. One example from the Project 2025 handbook." Now, quoting from them, it says, "Our goal is to maintain a biblically based, social science reinforced definition of marriage and family," end quote. He concludes and says, "That does sound a bit Gilead-ish," end quote. Thank you for coming along with me on this journey, taking a look at Project 2025, exploring it. What's it all about? Who's behind it? Who are some of the major players that have signed on to partner with it? If you're not concerned by now, then there's definitely something not right. So thank you. Let me know what your thoughts, comments, and feedback are. You can respond to this post here on Patreon. And once again, I thank you for your support. Just a couple of quick things before I let you go. Remember that the name of this show is going to be changing very soon. We're working on a couple different titles. I think we've got it narrowed down, and that's going to be announced here in the next couple of episodes, maybe by end of April or so. And my book is going to be coming out hopefully very soon. I'm working with my good friend Tim Sledge. We're working on editing chapter by chapter by chapter. So when it's about ready to come out, I'm going to read a preview chapter so you can get an idea of what the book is about. And then just one last thing, we're going to have Ren Story coming for our monthly Mindshift Zoom call. The end of this month, it'll be on the 28th of April at 8 p.m. UK time. So I'll send out some reminders again. But yeah, mark your calendar now. You do not want to miss this Mindshift Zoom call with Ren. So thank you again for your support. Thanks for sticking with me on this long look at Project 2025. I will see you on the next Patreon exclusive episode right here on Mindshift Podcast.